Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Geico presents, yikes, another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Hang him from the yard.
Welcome back to another action-packed episode of Turd or Treasure. We have a smorgasbord of reviews for you this time. It's been a while. We took a bit of a break because it's summertime, and that's the time that it gets hot, and we want to take a bit of a vacation and get away. So what did I do during that time? Well, I watched a lot of movies and played a bunch of games that I was sent for review. Some with other people from Twig, some on my own, some with my roommate, some with family, just sort of to get a feel of everything. So we have a pretty full slate for you this time. We've got Extro, the horror film. We've got Death Row Game Show, Haunted, which is a TV show. Jack Frost, the horror film. We've got a controller from Power A for the Xbox One. We've got Ice Cream Man, The Awesomes, which is a TV show. Slaughterhouse.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
A game from NIS America, Tuhu. I can't pronounce the rest of it. I'll have to be very careful in my review pronouncing it. We've got The Crazies, The Maze, and Shining Resonance Refrain from Sega. So without further ado, let's get into the first review, Extro.
And now it's time for another special feature.
Heckle.
Second Sight Films, which is a independent film distributor, sent me Extro on Blu-ray. Now, I had only vaguely, briefly heard of Extro before, in that I knew it was a horror film, but I didn't know that it was an independent British horror film, and something that was pretty rare at the time, being that it was a gory film, and that the UK had some very strict laws about censorship in their films at the time. Now they're much more open, like the rest of the world is, but I had actually forgotten. I remember that they had censored a lot of, like, Cronenberg films and other horror films that were considered to be gory, or I think they called it their video nasties. That was the law they had about certain things that were just too over the top for the time for them. And this was one that sort of skirted by. So I went into this movie not knowing anything about it other than that it was a horror film. So the basic premise is a father is playing with his son out in his yard, and he's abducted by aliens and comes back multiple years later changed, and things start to happen and they go off the wall. There's psychic powers that bring toys to life to murder people and more, but I can't give any of that away because that's the magic of the plot. Now, what I can talk about is how does it look? I don't have anything for a reference on this in that it's the first time I've seen the film, but it looks pretty good for a film of its age. I watched the 2018 director's cut of it. I didn't notice anything different about any scenes that were cut. They didn't mention anything there. It's just some color correction he did. It's a little higher saturated because I did flip between that and the normal remastered version versus the 2018 director's cut remastered version. They're basically the same, just with different color tones. As far as the audio is concerned, it sounds fine. It's basically, it's a British film, so you're going to have to contend with the fact that an independent cinema film from the early 80s is going to have a certain sound anyway. British ones even more so, in that there's, picture old Doctor Who versus new Doctor Who. Britain was always a little behind when it came to these sorts of things, especially for sound design, but this actually turned out pretty good, and it felt like a lot of American movies. Now, other special features that they included on there were a documentary featuring interviews with multiple cast and crew, you know, about how they did their makeup, how they got their character parts, and it's all pretty cool. They actually loaded this with a lot of features, including, you know, you can get a soundtrack CD. Now, I did not get that. I got a full disclosure. I received a promotional copy. Promotional copies do not include the finished artwork or even finished artwork on the disc. You basically get a slip cover with a little paper slip with the disc in it, and then a sell sheet that explains all the features that are on it, and that's it, because it was a pre-production copy. So the finished copy does come with an original soundtrack, as well as a cool reversible artwork that would be cool, but, you know, I can't really rate that because it's not in my hands. I would say it's definitely worth watching. It's something that's really kind of freaky. I kind of think it's something I would want to come back to and watch again with a group of people and see what they think. It's not for everybody. I know there's some parts in there that are pretty out there that might not be sitting well with people. So it's something that I think it's worth seeing at least once. So check it out from Second Sight Films. When I was given the opportunity to review some Vinegar Syndrome Blu-ray releases, one of the first ones that caught my eye was the cover for Death Row Game Show. It just had a very cool 80s pop art vibe to it. And immediately, obviously, it made me think of Running Man, although this is more of a true game show than an actual, you know, Running Man show, because it's a lower budget, so they want to keep everything on one or two sets at the most. Now, when I pulled this out of the release sets that I had to review, I showed it to Mike the Birdman Dodd, and he said, "That's the one we're going to review first. We're going to watch that first. That looks so cool." So we pop it in, and first thing I did after I took it out of the packaging, we looked, and there's two discs. It comes with the DVD and the Blu-ray. It also comes with reversible artwork. So you can get the original poster on the inside, or this new artwork they created for the release that I actually think is better. And it's a good thing they put that on there, because it looks cooler. And that's the main cover for when you look at it here. Now, as far as special features go, it's got you know, remastered from a 2K scan of the negative. There's a commentary track with the director, as well as main actor and actress for it. There's a feature called Revisiting the Death Row Game Show, which is a making of documentary, lasts about 30 minutes. There's a 2015 director's cut of it. Now, we watched just the original cut because we wanted to get the full thing, so we didn't watch the director's cut. I don't think it needed to have anything cut or changed personally, because I really liked it. Now, there's also director introductions for it. There's two short films that are also included on the disc, original theatrical trailer and TV spots, and it's in mono, so be prepared. Ooh, you're not going to be blown away by the audio, but didn't need it. That gave it that retro feel, having it come out of the one speaker. Now, in some setups, it'll come out of your stereo left and right exactly the same. If you have a center speaker and your Blu-ray player is set up a certain way, it'll just come out of the center speaker where all the text, sort of the voices usually come out of in a 5.1 surround set. So the basic setup is Chuck Todin hosts the most controversial show on TV, Live or Die, where death row inmates compete against each other for a chance to beat the executioner. However, when he accidentally kills a mob boss of the most feared mafia in the city, a hitman tries to put an end to him and his show once and for all. As a battle of wits and survival ensues, he's forced to engage in the very tactics he uses on its contestants or die trying. Now, what it sounds like a horror film when you look at it, it's actually a comedy. like a full black comedy. There's gruesome but hilarious deaths. The closest thing I can say to this, and we both agreed on it when watching it, it felt like a trauma movie on a higher budget. It has that goofball, zany, out of this world sort of comedy. It has this zany, out of this world comedy that you don't usually see in mainstream movies, and you can only really get from these independent films, especially of this era, where you can have somebody have their head chopped off or something, and it still be funny. For instance, there's one part in it where, specifically with the head chopping off, a person is offered, he has a chance to win money for his family. Well, they're going to execute him, so he's going to have his head cut off via guillotine, and if his head turns face up in the basket, his family will get money. And if it doesn't, then it doesn't. So, and his family wins the money, and they're so happy and proud of him. They're proud of how he died, I guess, and that his head turned up. And that just put me over the top. I couldn't stop laughing. It's something that I'm probably going to watch multiple times. It's one of those things where you know the plot and everything, but if you have a different crowd of people every time, they're going to laugh and find something new in it. And I still think it's something that's going to be part of my collection for quite some time. So, if you get a chance, go pick it up. Now, that's Death Row Game Show, brought to you by Vinegar Syndrome. Haunted was a TV show that ran in 2002 that I missed in its initial run, but I remember catching eventually when it was Phase 4 Films had brought out a DVD copy of it, probably about 10 years ago now. And one thing that plagued that disc release was it was an atrocious transfer. They had, I don't know what was wrong with it, but it was so dark, you could actually not make out almost anything that was happening on the screen. And I don't mean like having to adjust my TV to make it brighter to see it. I mean, it was so dark, you couldn't make out what was happening. It was to the point where you had to go, and there were people that were taking copies of it, putting it on the net, and taking the gamma, shooting it right up and lighting it up, because then that was the only way you could see what was happening. So it was actually a completely, in my mind, useless DVD release. Now, why am I talking about it here? Kino Lorber decided to get the rights and put it out on Blu-ray. So this is not going to be a review of the show itself. It's going to be, is it a technical upgrade? And I can say, yes, it is. There's no special features in this. It's very similar to that DVD release that came out earlier, except you've got a slightly better quality audio. I've done sort of a side-by-side on it, and it does sound better, but dramatically better visual. Now, this is a show that wouldn't have been released in HD at the time, because 2002 was a little early. People were experimenting with HD broadcasts in 2003, 2004. Didn't really catch on until the 05 time or so, 05, 06 season. So is it going to look miraculous? Is it going to look exactly the same as a new release today of, let's say, the newest action show? No, it's not. But does it look better? It looks phenomenally better. The color correction is better on it. It's bright enough you can see everything that's happening. You can make out details on everything. There's rainy scenes in the very first episode that you can make out the drops of water. It's a significantly better transfer. And that's all you can really ask for in this. And its price point is pretty good. Considering it's a Blu-ray, you're looking in the $30, $40 range, before it's on sale. That's the MSRP. It'll be cheaper than that when you find it on Amazon or Walmart. And it's definitely worth checking out, because Matthew Fox was the star of it, and he went on to be in Lost and a bunch of other programs since then. And it's sort of in that period of 98 to 2003 or so, where there were a lot of shows coming out that only had one season or didn't have, you know, more than one season or even half a season. In this case, there were four episodes that went unaired when it was canceled. Doesn't mean it was a bad show. It actually is pretty good. It just didn't catch its audience at the time. Think more like Firefly, that sort of deal, where it has a more of a cult following after the fact. So I would say definitely check this out. It's a significant upgrade over the DVD that came out years and years ago, that it's way out of print anyway. So that's Haunted on Blu-ray from Kino Lorber. The other day I sat down to watch Vinegar Syndrome's release of Jack Frost. Now, this isn't Jack Frost, the movie with Michael Keaton that everybody remembers. This is the movie that came out right around the same time with the exact same title, but is a horror comedy definitely not for children like that movie was. I remember growing up seeing there was a VHS tape. I think it was a red cover, and it had that lenticular, you know, the shiny plastic cover that if you turn one way, you see one picture, you turn the other way, you see another. Well, it had the snowman face very similar to the Michael Keaton cover, and then if you turn it the other way, it was a devil-looking snowman with a, like, sharp teeth that was ready to eat your soul. Now, on this Blu-ray release, if you open it up, it has the other picture as the reversible cover, so you can pick which version you want. It defaults to the evil-looking face first. I ended up watching this with my roommate, because we went, you know what? Let's watch something. Let's see. I have a bunch of things to review. Would you like to see something? And he goes, okay. So we put this in, and we couldn't stop laughing pretty much the entire time. It was so ridiculous from the setup of it, of the Jack Frost character being having, you know, a government experimental chemical sprayed onto him, to melting into the snow, to then becoming a living snowman that murders people. The funny thing was, whenever it tried to be funny, it wasn't funny, but all the times it wasn't trying to be funny, it was unintentionally funny, which is the best kind of B-movie out there. Something that tries to take itself very serious and then completely, you know, I don't know, it's hard to describe it. It's so intangible, the feeling you get from watching these B-movies, especially from the 90s. Now, this one was cleaned up, restored in 2K, so that means just a little above 1080p is what they restored it at. But it was well done. I mean, this is one of those ones that did have a DVD release, I remember, back in the day. And it is a significant jump from that, because I remember seeing previews for it, I think. I never did watch this movie because it scared the crap out of me as a little kid seeing the cover. So watching it now, I think I would have laughed even then. It has Shannon Elizabeth in a scene in a bathtub where basically, okay, I'm not going to say, where'd the carrot go is all I got to say. And it doesn't have really too many special features that are going to blow you away. It does have a commentary with the director, an introduction with the director, which, interestingly enough, it's so simple. It's just, he basically says, I really love this movie. A lot of people don't like this movie. Okay. And then moves on, which I thought was funny. Like, they just even included that at all. There's an interview with the lead actor. There's also interviews with the director of photography. And the cover artwork is reversible, like I had already said. It's in 5.1 audio, and it sounds great and crystal clear. You can hear all those great 90s, those direct-to-video audio audio music tracks that you're so used to with the mood synth. And then there's some like Christmassy type, you know, electric guitar music in it. So there's not much more I can really say about this, except this is something that's going to be part of my collection that I pull out at Christmas time pretty much every year. It's going to go in the pile with this, Bad Santa, and I don't know, Die Hard, as far as my holiday movie classics. So we're going to change gears a little bit here. We've went through a bunch of movies and TV shows, and now we've got a controller to review from Power A. So after that, we've got Ice Cream Man, The Awesomes, and Slaughterhouse. So check those out right now.
This is a fair request, and I promise I will not judge any person only as a teenager, and that this is no more right than saying all teenagers are drunken dope addicts or glue sniffers.
Third-party gaming accessory company Power A sent me their new enhanced wired controller for Xbox One and Windows 10. They made a note of that on the box for me to review, and it's something that I think is pretty cool. It weighs about half as much as your standard Xbox One controller, but has the, I'm going to say, exact same design. I was looking at my controllers side by side, and they look basically the same. The main difference is, this is a wired controller, but the cord is detachable. You know, why would you say you would include something like that as a feature? Well, it's for storage. You can unplug it and store things away a lot easier without having to bend a cord. So there is no battery compartment in this. You can't use it as a wired at all, wireless at all. It is an only wired controller. but it has impressive build quality. I was playing around with it, trying to flex the controller. The plastic feels good. There's no odd smell that you get from third party sometimes. It just has a very good feel in the hands. The D-pad feels clicky enough as well, and just rocks around just the right amount that you'd want. The analog sticks click as well, move around the way they should. All the buttons are in the right layout, feel. It feels like something Microsoft would have made themselves. And it does include two extra programmable buttons on there, so if you want to make yourself a little macros, you can do so. I'm not somebody who usually does that, but that is a feature that a lot of people are looking for. So it has some pretty cool little extra features like that. Now, the other thing is they have included the Rumble feature, and it's from Immersion Technology. They've licensed that. Now, I believe that's the same technology that it's used in Xbox controllers anyway, because they make a big point of saying that they licensed this Immersion Rumble technology and didn't just use their own random one. So I played it with it, and it does. It rumbles and feels exactly like an Xbox One controller would. Now, it works with Xbox One, S, X, Windows 10. So if you're looking for a quick and easy wired controller for Windows 10, this is also a great option for you. There's a bunch of colors it comes in. The one I received was one of the Emerald Fade from their Fade series, which has sort of a metallic look to it. It's a very cool color. There's a bunch of other ones as well, so you'll have to check them out. I believe that they're exclusive to Walmart in the States. Yeah, up in Canada, it looks hit or miss. I can't seem to find too many places that have them in stock yet because it's such a new product. So it is coming, though, and it's something that feels really good. It feels like if I handed it to a friend and had it plugged and wired, they would think it's a Xbox One controller, like an official one, but they'd wonder why it was so light, because it's very lightweight yet still very durable and strong. So I'm going to have to recommend it, you know, wholeheartedly, especially as an extra controller. This isn't one that you can use as your main unless you want to sit there wired in. It is a 10-foot cable that it comes with, so that's fine, but it also has the headphone jack in the bottom, so it does have the audio pass-through, so you can use it that way too. I would say the only reason I would say not to use this as your main is if you're somebody like Mike the Birdman, our glorious leader here at Twig, who is somebody that can't have wires on the ground because he uses a wheelchair to get around. So that's the only reason I would say not to use this as your main, but I think that I'm probably more so than using this for the Xbox, I'll probably be using this for my PC gaming. Because it's just something I can tuck away and it doesn't, you know, need extra batteries or anything. Just plug it right in and go. So definitely buy. Check it out. It's the Power A Enhanced Wired Controller for Xbox One. Ice Cream Man. What can I say about Ice Cream Man? This is a movie I had actually wanted to see for a very long time, but couldn't find it or get my hands on it. And it's something that I remember seeing, I think, on video previews on VHS tapes of the 90s. I didn't think it was a direct-to-video movie. I thought it was a theatrical feature, but it looks like it was a direct-to-video only. A movie starring Clint Howard. The other Clint. Not the Clint you're thinking of. But a Clint nonetheless. This was back when every movie, every horror film was trying to one up another on let's pick a random job and make it a serial killer or make it a slasher flick. You know, we've got the Candyman, we've got there's like every job possible. There was every holiday possible. You know, had a horror themed movie, and so why not the Ice Cream Man? And it's a good premise. It's an ice cream truck killer, but surprisingly doesn't kill the children. You think he was going to kill children. It's pretty gory, but he doesn't kill any of the children. He just terrorizes them, kills all the parents and everybody else. It's kind of creepy seeing the inside of an ice cream truck just covered with worms and bugs and stuff crawling all over the ice cream. Probably the most memorable scene in this that I can think of that I consistently laughed at and had to rewind it to watch it over and over again. I was watching with my brother, and we thought it was actually a pretty good effects. There is a scene where the ice cream man severs the heads of two cops, puts them on ice cream cones, and uses them as ventriloquist puppets, and then talks to them back and forth. And it was so absurd and ridiculous. I almost want to take a screenshot of it, and use it as my desktop background. It was restored in 2K from 35mm, and it looks crystal clean and clear. Especially like the releases that Vinegar Syndrome does, there's some restoration I've noticed in a lot of their films. Not always perfect, but they don't use anything like digital noise reduction. They don't put a lot of unnecessary tools over top of it to take away the film look. This looks like a restored, clean film, which is what you want. You don't want something that alters the actual look and feel of the film. It just looks clean and clear as you could possibly get without damaging the picture itself and changing the image. So I'm very happy with that. The audio, and it's a stereo. It's not anything you weren't going to expect a 5.1 surround from a 1994 direct-to-video movie, but it is in widescreen and it's not cropped. A lot of the mistakes people make with these movies is if they were intended for a full-screen, full-frame audience, especially if it was on a VHS back in the day, sometimes they were filmed in such a way that you couldn't, you know, put it in widescreen or it would crop it. It looks like what they've done is they made it open mat, and they found that, yes, the film was filmed in widescreen, but cropped for full screen, so they released it in the original camera negative format, which is great. So you actually get to see a little more. I did notice at one point, I don't know if it's because of this, brother and I had to pause it and rewind. There's a chase scene, and we think a boom mic popped into the screen from the top, though. So that shouldn't have been an issue, like if it was cropped from sides, but maybe it was just a goof that was left in, because it just looked a little unnatural. Just for like two frames, it looked like a boom mic came in there. And I'm always like looking and spotting for looking for those things particularly, because I love when it's like, oh, we put all this effort into a film, but we've got one little mistake that pops in. And the acting in this was hilariously atrocious from almost everybody. The children were decent, though, compared to the adults. As far as Clint Howard, he was fine. I mean, he played exactly who he was supposed to play. He was better than most of the other adults. I have no idea where they cast most of the adults. And it wasn't like they were purposely trying to act bad. They just weren't very good actors. Except for one person. Maybe two, actually. First, one of the cops is played by Jan Michael Vincent, who you might remember from Airwolf fame. He plays a cop who, when being chased by mental patients, he just walks very slow. I almost felt like he's like, I'm not going to run. It's in my contract. I'm just going to walk very slowly, just point my gun at people and just walk slow. It was sort of odd how slow he was in this. And it's almost like he was just like, nah, I don't want to do any action or anything cool. So that was kind of funny, but he was actually a decent enough actor in this. But the crazy thing was, just that I'm watching it, and it's all the parents have their own little issues going on, but one of the kid's parents, who played the priest at the church, was David Warner, who's a fantastic actor, a great voice actor, appeared in everything from Star Trek to the DC cartoon movies, and he's got that very unique, he's a British guy with a really good voice. And I was like, what's he doing here? And the more I saw him, he had nothing to do with the plot. He really did nothing. There was nothing that forwarded the plot. He was just in scenes to fill scenes. And I kept thinking, was he hired to do another movie and they just had him for a day? Or was it a case of they could get him for whatever reason, as long as they only had him for one day's worth of filming? Or to pad out, maybe have a better name in this movie? It didn't make sense, but I liked it nonetheless, because he could act circles around every single other person in the movie. So, sure, if you're a David Warner fan, you're going to have to collect this movie. The kills were pretty creative. We kind of wished, brother and I, that they had killed some of the children. Yes, we're sadistic fucks. I'm sorry. In a movie about an ice cream man terrorizing children, more children should have died, I'll tell you that. But it was a very, very well-made 90s horror direct-to-video movie. And I would say definitely check it out. That's Ice Cream Man from Vinegar Syndrome on Blu-ray. I'm just going to talk quickly about The Awesomes here. Now, The Awesomes was a series on Hulu. Think one of those adult Swim type shows where it's about a misfit group of superheroes. And it ran for 3 seasons, and Mill Creek decided to put it out finally on Blu-ray. Now, I'll tell you, the show is going to be dependent on if you like that kind of comedy or not, of the sort of adult cartoon comedy. I thought it was pretty good. I'm not going to go into the plots of it because, you know, that would spoil everything. But I'll just go into the technical details of the disc. It's, for the money, I think it's retailing for about $20 or so on Blu-ray, depending on if it's on sale. It's a pretty good deal. You get 3 discs. Each season is on each disc, is 1 disc. There's 10 episodes per season, so it's 10 episodes per disc. It has Dolby Digital, so no lossless audio, so it's the same audio you'd get from the DVD release, or if you were streaming it online over Hulu, it's a similar quality. But you do get full Blu-ray 1080p video quality, which is good. As far as special features, there's some promo trailers for each of the seasons, but nothing else. It's pretty bare bones a release, but you can't really beat $20-ish for an entire series of a show that ran at least, you know, more than 20 episodes. This is a 30-episode series. So I would say if you're an animation collector, you like a lot of the actors that are in this. It was created by Seth Meyers, and it had characters played by, you know, Bobby Lee, Taron Killam, Kenan Thompson, Bill Hader, Amy Poehler, Maya Rudolph, Andy Samberg. A lot of SNL people were involved in this. It's something you might want to check out. So I would say, you know, head over to Walmart or Amazon and pick it up. It's pretty good for the price. That's The Awesomes from Mill Creek. Slaughterhouse is a film I'd never seen before or even heard of. When it was sent to me by Vinegar Syndrome, I thought, this looks kind of neat. It's got a cover of a big, burly, farm boy-looking dude with a butcher's, I guess it's a cleaver, and it looks very pig-themed, so I went, let's check this out. So I decided to watch it with our very own Mike the Birdman Dodd, and he said, hey, I think I've seen that title before. I think I've heard of this. And we watched it, and he could have sworn that he had seen at least VHS copies of it at a store somewhere. But as we were watching, he goes, I've never seen this. So we watched it, and it was a pretty straightforward slasher flick from the 80s. Looking more into it, the director really only ever did one other thing. Most of the actors never did anything else. It's just sort of a relic of its time in that all these people came together to make a horror film that went to theaters, and it, I guess, got mediocre results. That doesn't mean it's not good. We had a pretty good time watching it, and the deaths were pretty interesting, and the way it was filmed was pretty cool, and the whole... It almost felt like it was being sponsored by small butcher businesses, because the political message behind it was no mechanization. We don't want assembly line and robots doing all of our butchering. We want to do everything by hand, because nothing beats, you know, a butcher with a knife and all this. And I'm like, okay, sure, that makes sense. At the same time, that's something that you, if that was your plot of your movie, you couldn't make it today because everything is already automated. It was pretty well put together. Some of the special features on this were interesting because it talked about how the murderer, like the psychopath in the slaughterhouse, is actually a lot shorter than some of the other actors. So they had to film him from weird angles, have him stand up on things when he was like looking at people to make him look like he was a big burly dude, but he wasn't as tall as they were hoping for. So it's kind of neat to see the curtain pull back and reveal, you know, how they do these little tricks to make everything look as grandiose and menacing as they do in these films. It's been remastered, you know, from the original 35mm film, which it shows. It does look dated. There's some shots in here that looked a little crappy, I'll be honest. At the beginning, I think they used different film stock for some of the scenes, and they probably couldn't clean it up much. Some of the nighttime scenes. And then, at about that, maybe a third of the way through the movie mark, it just magically looks better. It's like partway through, they just started getting better film stock, or whatever the 35mm film canisters were, they survived better, so that they were easier to scan and easier to restore. That doesn't take away anything, because even the parts at the beginning of the film where I thought the film quality looked a little crappy, it would still look better than it did on VHS back in the day, and I would say on par with what a DVD would look like. It just didn't have that Blu-ray look until about a third of the way through. The audio is surprisingly in 5.1 considering its age, but that's because this, I believe, must have had a DVD release earlier. When, remember, there was a rage for a while where they were taking every film and giving it a 5.1 audio track, even if it was a mono original. This would have been probably a mono original or maybe a stereo at maximum. And it does sound good. It doesn't sound like it was like a hokey, fake sort of release. Yeah, it's got archival interviews from other video releases for this, a new interviews with the lead actresses. There's just a stack of special features, outtakes, just shooting script gallery, reversible cover art, again, that has the logo placed in a different spot. It's just really cool how many features they cram into these discs, and it's I would say it's definitely worth seeing. So, you know, I would say if you still have a local rental house, rent it. If not, as most people don't anymore, go pick it up. Now that's Vinegar Syndrome's release of Slaughterhouse on Blu-ray. Alrighty then, next up we have Tohu Genzo Wanderer Reloaded. That's a mouthful, on the Nintendo Switch. We've got that for review, as well as The Crazies from George A. Romero, The Maze, and we're going to finish up with Shining Resonance Refrain, and then I'll bring it all back and we'll talk about what's coming up next.
Do you have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
All that thought, it's crapper time.
This is one that I kind of been dreading having to review now that I've played it. It's Tohu Genzo Wanderer Reloaded on the Nintendo Switch from NAS America. Now, why do I say I'm dreading it? I really, really hated this game. I am somebody that keeps an open mind. I'm the RPG guy when it comes to This Week in Geek, so I try to play pretty much everything. I'm interested in everything. This is one of those dungeon crawl games where you move a tile and everything else around you moves a tile, and that's sort of how it works. Each tile you move, it moves and does, and everything else moves and does their own things as well. I don't want to complete. Here's the thing: you don't want to ever just say, "Oh, I hate a game," and that's it, and just shut off. But I'll say why I didn't care for this game. I found the graphics were subpar beyond anything. Like the graphics were bad. Whether it be on the small screen, playing in portable, or in console. The audio was bad. The music repeated itself and was cheap. The gameplay was boring. And I hate saying that because I love most RPGs. And I don't know what else to say about it. If you're somebody that likes these dungeon crawlers, that these hardcore, you know, moving a tile by tile rogue games, you might like it. But I've seen ones that are better than this. Those usually aren't my main go-to RPG genre titles or subgenre. But even then, I can tell the difference between a good one and one that's not very good. And I just didn't find this interesting or appealing at all. It was a chore to get through. Now, does that mean that you're not going to find joy in it? It doesn't mean that. It means you may find it that you like it. But it's something that I'm going to say, watch a bunch of YouTube videos on, see if you like it, and go from there. Because I didn't care for the menu system, the crafting system, pretty much anything. I honestly don't have anything about this game that I actually liked. And that's a rarity for me. So I honestly can't recommend it. You know, that's personal preference. I can't recommend it on my own. You may like it. Again, check out some YouTube videos on it. So that's Tohu Genzo Wanderer Reloaded on the Nintendo Switch from NAS America. George A. Romero's The Crazies comes to us from Arrow Films, and it's on Blu-ray, and it's the first time that I've seen this film. I've heard lots about it, in that I know it was influential on the zombie genre at large, especially the sick infected zombie, not the, you know, living dead zombie. Think like 28 Days Later, where it's a biological weapon sort of thing. So the basic plot is, it's nothing, you know, out of the ordinary now, but for the time when this came out, you know, we're talking, you know, the better part, you know, over 40 years ago. It was about a government weapon that fell in a plane crash, and that poisoned the water of a small town, making people go crazy and manic, and the government trying to cordon it off and keep it quiet at the same time, the townsfolk not knowing what's going on, so they're rebelling against it. And it's actually very prophetic of what could happen, and more likely what is happening today in the political climate of people afraid of the government taking away their guns, so they're willing to fight the government trying to be secretive about their projects and trying to have their own rule over things. It's kind of interesting that it's something that came out in the early 70s, yet is very, very reminiscent of what could and does happen today. Now, it's been remastered and from a 4K restoration, and it really shows. This film looks fantastic, considering it was such a low-budget film. Like, horror films didn't have a high budget, especially the George A. Romero movies in the early 70s, and this looks... You know, I can't say it would look like it was made today, because most films aren't made on the kind of film stock that they are then, but it looks fantastic. It looks crisp and clear. There's definition, especially when there's fire. You can see the smoke lines coming off of everything. You can see individual strands of hair. They've done a really, really good job of going back to the original film negative and then just touching up everything. I didn't see, you know, a speck of dirt on anything. I didn't see any... breaks or cracks in the film or even any irregularities. Like, a lot of times you see the film shake a bit when it's on film, or there's a bit of a juddery effect. Nope, it looks like a new movie filmed on 35mm now would look. It's in mono audio, which is fine because it was for the time period. I'd rather not have them try to enact like a fake stereo or something to it. So the audio sounds fine. The acting is pretty good for the time period. One actor was kind of bad. It was the professor trying to work on the cure. That guy tried, he overacted and went way above what he should have done. Everybody else was perfect and spot on. I don't know what he was trying to do. As far as special features go, Arrow's been putting a lot of features on all of their releases. And I'm just going to have to, you know, list them off here for you, because, you know, with the standard English subtitles, you've got that. But you've got a commentary by Travis Crawford. You've got Romero Was Here, Locating the Crazies. It's a historian takes people on a guided tour of the city. There's also a feature where they uncovered some home videos of behind the scenes while they were filming it, which has never been seen before. There's Crazy for Lynn Lowry. She was one of the actresses in this that goes crazy in it, obviously. And she discusses her early career, including her role in the film. There's more Q&As from a film festival, audio interview with the producer Lee Hessel. There's behind-the-scenes footage with that I explained earlier, with optional commentary by the historian on it. Alternate opening titles, because this film was known by a couple different titles, and it just shows differences in how they would have framed that when they put the text up on the screen. There's image galleries, which, to be honest, I didn't go through, and I don't think most people go through. It's just cool to see that they're there in case you want to see them, but most people want to watch something moving or talking on here. There's TV spots, trailers, and what's really cool is there's a reversible sleeve of the actual Blu-ray that shows the front has a new artwork that was created for it, and the insert, if you flip it around, actually has what the original poster looked like. And it's really cool that you have the option on a lot of these new releases to change the cover art. So it's definitely worth checking out. I think it's a very large piece of cinema history that a lot of people don't know was so influential. So I would say I would watch it again, even though it's, you know, from early 70s, it holds up, and I would definitely say it's a must-buy. The Maze is a classic 1950s horror film released by Kino Lorber Classics. On Blu-ray, it's in a 3D, one of those 3D hybrid discs where it has the program in 3D for 3D televisions, and then the 2D version as well. I watched the 2D version because I don't have a 3D TV, and to be honest, at this point, I'm willing to bet most people don't, and they never did get them. It is a cool feature to have, so it's on there for if you do have that way to watch it in the future, or just for archival purposes. But to be honest, this is a movie that was an early 3D film, and after watching it in 2D, there's only maybe two or three parts that would have had the effect where it comes out towards you. But that being said, how does this film hold up? Well, it is not scary. I'm just going to say that right now. It's not scary whatsoever. It is very indicative of the time in that it's a suspenseful horror film. How do you want to explain that better, maybe? It's a horror film that tries to play into your head, think like Hitchcock, but doesn't execute as well as a Hitchcock film does. This film ended up being, to me and to my colleagues, a comedy. It's much more funny because every single, you can almost make drinking games out of it. Every single time an actress in this, the lead actress or one of the friends, says something or does something that isn't logical, take a drink. Like, oh, the husband has gone crazy and all this. Just leave, go get help. Oh no, you're gonna stay? Oh, he locked you in your room. Okay, the second the door's open, why don't you just leave? Or just, there's certain things like that in there. I'm not gonna go too much into the plot, except that the monster reveal in it was so ridiculous that I almost peed myself laughing. They even have an introduction for it in the trailer that's included, saying, you know, if you find out the mystery of the maze, don't reveal it. So I won't reveal it here, but it was the most hokey, hilariously bad monster costume I've ever seen. Ever. And it made me laugh so hard. So, and just the logic behind it, using 1950s, what they thought of as science, as being real, was so bad that it became hilarious, and it was definitely worth watching. Now, there is also a commentary with a film historian that was just cool. I listened to a bit of that. It went into some details of the film and how it was made and where it was shot and everything, and that was pretty cool. So it's definitely, if you're a film buff, you're going to want to listen to that. There's a new interview with the star, Veronica Hurst, and interesting thing about her interview was all she kept talking about was how nice everybody was and how they all wanted to take her to dinner, and they were so nice and they took me to dinner, and this person was so nice, oh, and they took me to dinner. It's like all she remembered of it was that they took her to dinner over and over again. So she wasn't very, I'll be honest, she wasn't a very good interview for it, because she didn't really reveal anything about the film except that people were nice and they took her to dinner, and that she was very happy that her co-host and co-star was not creepy and didn't try to have sex with her. That's basically all she said for the entire interview. So it's still worth listening to, and I'll say she still has a decent enough memory considering how long ago this film was made. But the bread and butter of this film is just watching the movie, and this is one of those ones. Again, watch it with your friends, have a couple brews, and try to take it, you know, with a grain of salt, considering how old it is. It is a classic in that it's. I can see where it had influence on other films that came afterwards, especially that this was an early 3D film. So it is very cool. That's all I can really say about it. Just go and check it out. That's The Maze, the 3D remastered edition from Kino Lorber. Shining Resonance Refrain had been on my radar for quite some time now, since I saw an ad pop up for it on Amazon before I think anything was announced. They might have leaked it out. And I had been a fan of the Shining Force series back on the Genesis, but I hadn't really played anything since. I know they had done multiple releases in the Shining series on every console since then. It just never really crossed my path. Now, this was coming to every platform, and I had an opportunity to review it on the Nintendo Switch, which I honestly think is the best platform for it. I did a little research into it, and I, because I, I knew that it was a remake of some sort, but I didn't know if it was a remake of like a PSP title or something. It turns out it was a PS3 title from 2014. So that makes sense that it didn't get a release here, because it was right around the time that we had sort of given up on a lot of PS3 games in North America. And looking at it, it does look like a PS3 game where they've cleaned up some of the graphics on it, playing at a full 1080p with the 60 frame rate, 60 FPS. And it doesn't look this gen as in like the newest graphics. Like, it doesn't look like a new Tales game or something similar. I'm bringing up Tales because it has a similar fighting system to it. It has a very last gen, but it has a charm to it. So I'm not displeased with the graphics whatsoever, especially when you're playing in portable mode. Like in the handheld mode, this looks great, which is why I'm saying it's probably best on the Switch. Because I was playing it a bit. I took it to families when I was visiting for a weekend, and I was able to play portable, and it was perfect. I popped it in my dock to play it on the TV in surround sound. The sound mixing is great on it. Absolutely fantastic. You can hear everything happening around you on the battlefield. The talking comes out of the center for cutscenes, but in the battlefield, you can hear things happening left, right, front, back, all that sort of thing. You know, great dynamic range in the audio and music. The music is great. There's not a ton of tracks in it, but it's still very, very pleasing to the ear. Nothing is jarring. Nothing seems out of place. It was a very good job. It's a very AAA package, is how it feels presented to me. Now, I got about 40 hours or so out of the game before it was over. And there is the refrain mode, where you can have two of the enemy characters join your party. And you can play through the game that way, where it changes some of the plot points, which is cool. It's a little added feature to replay it again after. Now, I found the game to be fairly easy. I played it a bit on normal and a bit on casual, back and forth. And normal just makes it a little more grind-heavy, so I always try to turn it onto casual for review playthroughs, because if you're playing it on normal, I wanted to see how difficult it was. It wasn't that it was going to be more difficult. It was just going to take longer, because you were going to have to grind and be a little more tactical in how you play. Nothing felt like it was dramatically different. But this way I could save a few hours to do my review, because it's a long game. It took me about 40 hours, like I said. So, as far as design choices, there's a couple things that I didn't care for. One, you've got the main city that you go to always. It's where your starting point is, your base of operations, and you go around the world from there. There's no fast travel. You can get items eventually that let you travel back to the main base, but there's a lot of go here, go to the base, then go to this next place, then go to the base, and it's a lot of running through areas that you shouldn't need to. You don't have to fight enemies, because you get to a point in the game where you unlock very early on, actually, the grimoire sections, which is dungeons that you can go through that let you grind and get items. And I found myself playing that more than anything to level my characters up and get new items than actually fighting people on the field. And I was more powerful than people in the field pretty much every which way. Every chapter, the characters on the field, the enemies, level up to a certain level that they sort of figure you should be at. And outside of that, they don't really level up with you. So you could go grind yourself and be 10 levels higher than them, and they'll run away from you on the field anyway. So I do like that if you get powerful enough, they run away and you don't need to fight them. But they have a tendency to do things that a lot of newer JRPGs seem to do in these open world type games, is have random bad guys that are 10 or 20 or 30 levels higher than you that you have a hard time running around to avoid, and then you'll just get killed. And it's like that was an issue with recently with Xenoblade. Same deal. You could run into the wrong area and just get swamped and destroyed, and you're like, God damn it. So it does have that feature in it that I didn't really care for. But once you get yourself sufficiently powered up with leveling up, I'd say once you hit about level 50 or so as your main character, you can pretty much swamp anything, even the ones that are way higher powered than you in the field, because you can turn into a dragon and then do massive damage. So as far as the plot goes in this game, I thought it was pretty good. Very very 90s feel to it, in just how one of the characters looks like Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII, only they color swapped him. So they made all the black in him white and all the white in him black, and it's basically the same thing. So there's certain character archetypes that they like to go with in this. It felt like I was playing a late 90s, early 2000s, like a PS1, PS2 era game. And you know what? I kind of like that. You know, as much as I like modern RPGs, I do like every once in a while throwing on a classic feeling game. And that's what this felt like, a classic JRPG, although with an action-based battle system. So I didn't care for the dating aspect of it. There is a lot of these games have, like Persona has even, where you have a romance option, or at least building bonds with your characters. There was a lot of tedious work in that I didn't feel was necessary and didn't seem to really do much. I know it improves some of your aspects in battle that let the AI do things to help you. So the closer bonded you are with somebody, the more likely they are to help you out in battle, sort of thing. But I found it was a lot of, you know, go and beat up this bad guy for this part of the mission, come back, talk to everybody, go to sleep, have a scene with them, take them around town, hopefully they like you more afterwards, and then rinse repeat over and over and over and over and over again. It felt like it felt very half-baked. And then at the very end of the game, the person I was closest with, all it gave me was an extra scene at the end of the game that was like one frame long. It wasn't worth it. But as far as the combat goes, this is a very fun game. The battles are great. They feel good. They feel like you're in control. You never feel like you're being beaten down for the sake of being beaten down. It's about learning the patterns. So if there's a boss that was difficult, you likely didn't do the pattern right. So there is a dragon that you fight in this one part where it flies up into the air. Well, you can do one move that actually knocks it out of the air if you know which move to do, and that'll break it to the ground, and then you have like 5 seconds where you can just do more and more damage to it. So you learn these things the more you play, so that felt rewarding. The story was pretty good, like I said, as far as if you like JRPGs from the 90s, and I would say it's a pretty good title. I would say go check it out, especially on the Switch.
Well, there you have it. That is all the reviews that I have up until now. We've had a bit of time to collect them all. We've got more coming up because there's a fair bit that's come in from Vinegar Syndrome. They sent in a big box of Blu-rays, as I like to call it. We've got a lot of other shows coming up. Some of it is going to be split into other shows like Twig After Dark, which I believe we're going to try to get out on Mondays. Then we've got the movie show whether we were going to do a movie show separately. It's probably just going to be part of Shorter Treasure, as we've got a lot from Vinegar Syndrome and Film Chest to look at, as well as other things coming in from Arrow Video, as well as I've actually just got a package in the mail today from Olive Films with a vengeance slasher slash something flick, revenge flick. We'll have to get into it later. But there's stuff always flowing in, so we're definitely going to be having a lot more content coming up in the coming weeks. We've got on the slate for this week, we've got Twig, the flagship show on Sunday. Monday we have the Twig After Dark premiering, or re-premiering. Tuesday, I believe we have a prototype coming out. Then we've got on Wednesday is a botched roll. Thursday will be another Tour to Treasure because we've got a bunch more reviews to get out. And I think we've got a reprieve on Friday. Unless maybe we'll do something else. We'll see what's coming out. But the idea will be to, for the next little while, trying to get, you know, 3 or 4 shows out a week, because we've got a lot of content to get through. And we're trying to get through as much as we can before the second death wave of heat hits us later on the summer. So until then, I'm Alex, signing off.
Okay, son, now you're starting to scare the viewers.
Just act normal.
I'd ask you to do the same, but I'm afraid that ship has sailed.
Why are
there's so many ostriches?
But you have a game that is dipped in a
ropey, thick window cocking.
So guys, we'll be right back right here on This Week in Geek, only on thisweekingeek.net and many other sites where I syndicate this crap, because I'm a media slut.
I like turtles.
Loose like your mom.
That's right.
No fisting, you say. Anything else you object to?
Me lucky tater tots.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at This Week in Geek. And check out our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. And if you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time. And remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Me lucky tater tots.
What about the wiener?
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-o! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi. So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.